Joining us now is Raymond Stock, an expert on Middle Eastern cultural and political affairs. Raymond lived in Cairo for 20 years, from 1990 to 2010. He's translated 7 books by Egyptian Nobel laureate in literature, Naguib Mufaz, whose biography he is currently presenting. And this is after he was denied re-entry and deported from Egypt by the Mubarak regime 10 years ago, in December of 2010, due to his Foreign Policy magazine article criticizing the then bid by the explicitly anti-Semitic culture minister Farouk Hosni to head UNESCO. Former Guggenheim fellow with a PhD in Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations from the University of Pennsylvania, he now teaches Arabic and Middle East studies at different universities. Raymond, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Greg, for having me, and Gary as well.
And where are you now? You're in New Orleans?
I'm in Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge.
That's so tell us, Louisiana State University is where I'm teaching now.
Yeah. What's the situation on the ground right now, just in terms of what's going on with the protests? I'm going to ask you that for 30 seconds, just so we can get a little bit of a background.
The protests here in the States?
And then we'll compare. Yeah, what's going on in Baton Rouge?
It's pretty quiet here.
And you would expect, not everywhere in America there's riots going on, and that's why we can talk about the Middle East right now, because there are other things to discuss. Tell me, there is a lot of Russian activity going on now in Egypt. We have a nuclear power plant, which is being built. We have the establishment of a Russian trade zone in the Suez Canal. We have the acquisition of dozens of Russian fighter jets. Give me a general overview of what's going on with Egyptian-American relations and why there seems to be a splintering and movement towards Russia by the Egyptians.
Well, at the very highest level, there is in terms of personal relations, there's a good, very good relationship between President Trump and President Assisi. They're almost birds of a feather in some ways. But they have competing national interests, and particularly from the Egyptian point of view. The Egyptians do not view us as a reliable ally. And the Russians were very quick to exploit this when it became apparent that this was so during the Obama administration, when the Obama administration did not immediately accept wholeheartedly. In fact, it almost tried to reverse the overthrow of President Morsi, who was an Islamist, who was extremely divisive. I note that in Western media now, the term that they use was popularly elected but divisive leader, because that is the reality. He was elected. If we think it was a legitimate election, we're not really entirely sure. But he was elected, and he proved to be very divisive, as anyone would have been able to tell you if they understood the Muslim Brotherhood, where he came from. So when that occurred July 3rd, 2013, after major demonstrations, huge demonstrations, perhaps the largest in history, on June 30th of that year, the Obama administration was very upset that its chosen representative, you might say, in Egypt, it had preferred the Muslim Brotherhood for some time over the previous president, Hosni Mubarak, who they viewed as not popular enough. And in fact, he wasn't very popular, but he was not overthrown, as people think, by popular protests. He was overthrown by the military with the aid of popular protests. When Mohamed Morsi was overthrown, the military had to act. There was no way that they could continue with the Morsi administration, with the volume of demonstrations that were going on at the time. And it came from within the Morsi administration. So
let's focus on Russia, though. I know the
history.
Well,
I wanted to get that was my next sentence. Is that okay. During this moment, we chose to freeze our aid, or at least half of our aid, and that caused an opening between Egypt and Russia. Russia moved in immediately. Putin was the first to congratulate Assisi. His becoming elected president the next year. I mean, it was a very opportune moment for Russia to enhance its relations with Egypt, from which it had been frozen since 1972, 76, 70, 72 and 76 were two different key dates in the relationship between Russia and the Soviet Union then and Egypt. And they had been frozen since all agreements were canceled between the Soviet Union and Egypt in 1976, they were resumed. His relations were resumed on a very warm footing. And as Nabil Fahmy, the foreign minister, put it, we wanted to get him back to the Soviet era level. They have since that time, they have had an extremely strong military relationship with Egypt, one they had not had, as I said, since 1976. They are now the chief, or could be considered the likely chief arms supplier of Egypt. We give $1.3 billion in aid, mostly military aid, to Egypt each year. We have done so since the Camp David Accord era, since the Egypt-Israel Peace Treaty of 1979. That is dwarfed by the amount of arms sales that Egypt is doing with foreign countries, including Russia. This $2 billion deal with Russia for the Su-35,
So let's
which
talk
is
about
meant
that for a
to,
second. Last year, Egypt did sign this $2 billion agreement to buy 20 more Su-35 fighter jets from Russia. This has worried American officials insofar as they have warned Egypt that they could be sanctioned under the Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Act, CASA. Last month, a state-run Russian media outlet reported that a aircraft plant where these were supposed to begin actually being produced has started fulfilling that order. Why do you think that Egypt, which, as you pointed out, has received billions, over $40 billion in American military aid over the past 40 years, and plenty of high-end military hardware from the U.S., so determined to follow through with this purchase?
Because they don't get enough from the United States, first of all. And secondly, the United States has shown that it was willing to suspend aid based upon internal actions taken by Egypt, which they view as an infringement upon their sovereignty.
Okay, so let's break down that statement for a second. You first said that they don't get enough from the United States. Does Egypt really have a need for so much advanced military hardware?
They think they do. I'm not saying they actually do. They from their point of view, you have to look at it from how they see the world. They think that they're in a very dangerous neighborhood. They are in a very dangerous neighborhood. They need to be able to project their power. They have basically a bifurcated strategy. On the one hand, they want to deal with threats that come from outside to their internal security, such as from the Islamist groups and possibly from other entities, especially Iran. But Iran has become a more complicated issue
But
because
they're
of the
dealing with
relationship with
Ethiopia now,
Russia.
Sudan. They're sponsoring the civil war in Libya.
The
They're
next
always
thing I
worried
want
about
to say
Israel.
was, yeah, they're worried about, that was the next thing I want to say was they're worried about the Ethiopian dam, and they're always worried about Israel. And the dam, I think, requires for them to have a long range bomber capacity, and they have to have missile technology to deal with any war with Ethiopia over water. I'm not saying it's going to come to war, but they have to be planning for contingencies like that because they could lose so much water in the first few years as the Ethiopian Renaissance Dam fills up. It will take some time. It will reduce the amount of water that Egypt gets. Egypt is trying right now to increase its share of the water in advance of the dam being filled.
All right, so
And so that's one issue. Now the other is Israel. And Israel, they have the closest relationships they've ever had with Israel because of security concerns, especially around Islamists, Hamas particularly, and the terrorist groups that are operating in Sinai.
right, and
And
Israel has
also
actually
from the
carried
West
out
in Libya.
hundreds. Israel has carried out hundreds of airstrikes against both the ISIS affiliate in Sinai, Ansar Beit HaMaqdis, and also it has provided vital intelligence to Egypt and to the Egyptian intelligence authorities on activities going on in Egypt proper, beyond the Sinai Peninsula. Don't you think that the cooperation between Sisi and Netanyahu, at least at the very top level, would address some of that hesitancy about a alleged Israeli threat?
At the very highest planning level, it does. But there is a constituency for the other view inside the military. It's part of their, not just the military culture, but the society, social culture, the general Egyptian society's view of Israel is so negative from years of propaganda and conflict before that they really cannot quite bring themselves to have a war and peace with Israel officially. So they during the Mubarak era, I witnessed this personally. The security people would cooperate with each other, but they would party together. They would give each other food and at events where they were both showing up for security reasons, and they would hang out together, on the side of these little events, and that was not possible to do in public. And that's the same situation that Egypt has now in its relationship with Israel, regardless of the fact that everyone can see that they're cooperating on security issues on a much grander level than they ever had before.
So let's move
It's
beyond
it'll take
security issues for a
generations to deal with
second,
it.
and let's focus on energy for a moment. Again, with the Russian connection, there's a $28.75 billion Russian-built nuclear power plant being planned and built on the northwest coast of Egypt. Does this make any economic sense, considering their water problems, considering that they are still a very large exporter of diesel? Excuse me, not diesel, but oil and natural gas deposits that they've now found in the Eastern Mediterranean. What is this doing to benefit Egypt when all I see is $28 billion in debt to Russia that might come out in the aftermath? Is there any economic sense to this?
Well, maybe for some, because it's again, it's more than one level of an operation here. One is that a certain group of people always benefits from contracts. There's a lot of corruption. But another is that they fear the loss of electrical power generation, it seems, from the dam being built in Ethiopia. And this is a serious issue for their long-term energy consumption. Whether this will actually solve that problem, I'm not sure. It certainly will give them an opportunity at some point to develop a uranium enrichment program. And if that should happen, that could lead to a nuclear weapons program. And that's
Right. Well,
something which was always
some
part
have
of the
ex
nuclear program before
right. Well,
1970, at least.
some have
It was
expressed
part of their
concern.
nuclear program.
Some have expressed concern exactly as you're talking about this nuclear power plant, because it could be a first step towards Egypt's
Yes, it
nuclear
could be.
weapons ambitions. If we have uranium enrichment facilities producing fuel for the plant, what's next?
Well, this is an interesting point. The Iranians and the Russians also work together. This is all part of the Russian strategy. And the Egyptians have found themselves in the unenviable position of being unable to refuse the offer, because they need to have an alternative source of electrical energy. And they also have always wanted, as a matter of pride and prestige, and because they are upset with Israel's apparent possession of nuclear weapons. I mean, everyone knows they have them, but they never officially have acknowledged it. And since this goes back to the origins of the program in Egypt, they were Nasser was deliberately trying to create a rival to the capacity that Israel had developed at Dimona in the 60s. And it simply ran out of funds and energy when Nasser himself died in 1970 in this program they were developing. And they've been trying to revive it as part of nuclear power ever since. There's still voices in Egypt that openly call for the possession of nuclear weapons. It's not official state policy. And in fact, they have been very militant and trying to use non-proliferation forums to limit Israel's options regarding nuclear power and nuclear energy, nuclear weapons, trying to get the international community to remove Israel's nuclear program. But they have not
Raymond, we
succeeded
have
so
about three
far.
minutes left.
Sure.
What can the United States, what policy prescriptions would you give to the State Department, to the Defense Department, to the Energy Department, to the President, of how to counteract this Russian increase in relations with Egypt?
I would recommend increasing aid to Egypt from our side as a to take away the need to go to other sources. I would impose stringent controls on it, of course. I would, this is a difficult thing to do given the amount of repression in Egypt. And it's a legitimate criticism that there is too much repression, even given there being in a more or less a civil war with the Islamists. But we have to find a way to make it less tempting, to make it less inevitable that they drift away from us completely. Because they're going to over time, especially since we do not have consistent foreign policy. Walter Russell Mead wrote a piece about the world waiting for us to resolve what to do with the election. But then again, we don't, even if we elect another leader next fall, they'll have the same problems in terms of having to cope with an American withdrawal through decline in our influence internationally. And on that point, I would like to just say that whoever is elected will have that problem. But President Trump will want to do the withdrawal as opposed to maybe someone else. At any rate, I don't think that we can use the same criteria we've used in the past to evaluate our aid exactly to Egypt. I think we have to be very, very strong in our attempt to restrain them from excess, but also very generous in our effort, in our, and sort of the carrot and the stick approach, basically. And I think we need to enhance that, because otherwise Egypt is going to disappear from our roster of allies
Raymond
over time.
Stock, fellow at the Middle East Forum, coming from Baton Rouge this morning. Thank you for joining us.
You're most welcome. Thank you.